When Alan Paul's wife got a job that required their family to move to China, he thought he might have to find interest beyond his two main passions, basketball and music. But Mr. Paul, who's a senior writer for Slam Magazine and Guitar World, was able to continue writing for both magazines, and he formed a blues band consisting of Chinese and American members, playing gigs all over the country. He shares stories from those 4 years in a book from Harper called Big in China, My Unlikely Adventures Raising a Family, Playing the Blues, and Becoming a Star in Beijing, and his band called Woody Allen, W-O-O-D-I-E-A-L-A-N, has also recorded a CD called Beijing Blues. And I'm very pleased to welcome Alan Paul to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Were you excited when your wife proposed moving to China? Because some men resist moving to accommodate their wife's jobs.
I've heard that's true. Well, not only was I excited, but in fact, she didn't tell me about it because she didn't think I would do it. And I overheard her mention casually to another friend who was asking what she might do next at the Wall Street Journal that there was an opening in Beijing. And I jumped on it and said, are you going to go for that?
Did she think she might go without you?
Oh, no.
You had three kids.
No, she didn't think she might go without me. She wasn't even going to apply for it because she didn't think I would be willing to move with three children. But I had this immediate concept that this was a great thing to do. And I know I get a lot of praise for, you know, quote unquote, sacrificing to move around the world for my wife's job. And I'm not beyond accepting it here and there. But truthfully, I think, you have to question who is sacrificing for who. She was working 12 or 14 hour days and I got to ride my bike around and have all these great adventures.
What about your kids? Did they think this was going to be a good thing?
Well, we made sure they thought it was a good thing as well as we could. At the time we were making the decision, our kids were almost 2, 4, and 7. So we sort of had to take the lead. And when we went over for a sort of a look-see visit, as they call it, to decide if we were going to move or not, once we had basically decided we were going to go, we went around taking pictures of things that would be fun for the kids, including the world's largest ball pit at the wonderfully named Fun Dazzle Play Space.
There's also a large expat community in Beijing. So how much contact do you actually wind up having with the Chinese people?
Well, that's really up to you. The Wall Street Journal actually owned a home in a expat compound called Beijing Riviera, which is just
there's no Riviera there. Why that name?
Well, some of the other names.
The ocean.
Let me tell you some of the other compound names out there: Lemon Lake, Dynasty Garden. And my personal favorite, Merlin Champagne Town. I'm pretty sure there's also not a champagne town in Beijing. It just sounds good. So we had that home. We didn't have a choice about where we'd move. There are some people who choose to live downtown, especially maybe older empty nesters or younger people, but also some people with families. That wasn't an option for us. Having that expat community made the initial transition really easy, especially for the kids.
But where did they go to school?
My children went to Dulwich College of Beijing, a British school.
Mm. So they were speaking English as a first language.
Yes, they were. And these days in Beijing, there's a lot of options for that. Our children went to a British school. So although we would have liked at times for them to have a more Chinese academic experience, they did have a very international one. I think there were 43 countries represented in the school.
We talked earlier about American expats suddenly discovering that they can have servants and all sorts of other things that they could never afford here.
Oh, I don't know what happened with you as well. I don't know what you're talking about, Leonard. No, absolutely, it happened, and it's something that we enjoyed. I mean, I won't lie. It makes life easier. It saves a lot of time and gives you opportunities to do other fun things. We did try to not get caught up in it. We were understaffed by expat in China standards. We didn't have help at night or on the weekends, but it is a luxurious lifestyle, and we went out of our way to make sure our kids understood that.
How aware were you of the booming aspect of China's economy?
Impossible to be unaware of it. It's all around you. There's a constant sense of momentum, of change, of incredible dynamic. It's an incredibly dynamic place, let me say that. And our immediate neighborhood was changing incredibly rapidly. I mean, you could go away for a week and you would come back and a block would be gone. Small villages would be gone, replaced by God knows what, sometimes, a new compound, sometimes just a beautification process where they would be putting, you know, beautiful parks and trees and bushes in.
Although many people have been made unhappy by some of those changes because Beijing is losing its ancient some of its ancient sites.
Indeed it is. And in some of the things I'm talking about out near our where we were living, sort of on the edge of the downtown area, there's not as much historical significance in the same way as there is to things downtown, but there's still people being relocated and losing their homes and losing their places of work. In some of the downtown areas where you're talking about, it can be really sad. I mean, you go to a neighborhood and you love it, and you come back a week or a month or 2 months later, and it's gone.
Before the Olympics, there was concern about all the pollution and the fact that dust storms seemed to bedevil Beijing. Was that a problem?
It was a constant issue, and sometimes it was a major problem. It was certainly for me something, and for my wife, that even if other things had broken in a way that we might have had the opportunity to stay long-term in Beijing, I would have had to give real second thoughts to it. Really, I worried about the health of my children. Ultimately, I felt that we were there for a relatively short term, and I do worry about people who are there long-term, namely Chinese people.
How did you find things to write about for your jobs at Guitar World and Slam?
Well, I didn't do that. The first year especially, I did a bit more of that. For Guitar World, I was really doing stuff on the phone and just doing a lot of interviews at 3 in the morning, doing CD reviews, using some stuff from my archives. For Slam, I did a bit of that as well. But also Slam, China is a hotbed of basketball. So I had some great basketball stories within China.
Although the big stars wind up coming to the United States.
To some extent, but one of my most fun stories that I ever did there was actually about one of my favorite college basketball players from the U.S., God Shamgod, now goes by the name Shamgod Wells, from New York, great New York playground legend who played at Providence and ended up playing basketball in Shaanxi. And I went and spent some time with him for Slam and loved every minute of it.
You got a car?
I did get a car.
That freed you to be able to travel to all sorts of places you couldn't otherwise. Is there total freedom to travel in China these days? Because in the past, there were all sorts of places you couldn't go to.
That's right. And the expat compounds, in fact, I think were really set up in a way to keep foreigners away from the Chinese population. But there's no limits now on where people can live or where they can travel. The limits are that a lot of expats don't want to drive. A lot of people's companies don't allow them to drive because of liability issues. So there's sort of a constant game of chicken going on the road when you drive, but I rather enjoyed it.
You had 3 kids in a country that has a one-child policy.
It sometimes got us a lot of attention. People would walk up to us and count on their fingers, "Yi er sun," 1, 2, 3, and give us a thumbs up, especially outside of Beijing. And also our children were all blonde-haired and blue-eyed, and they really got a lot of attention. And it was a great way of opening people up. And wherever we traveled, we always found people who wanted to share a meal with us, share a beer with us, have us over. Incredible warmth that I'm not sure would have been so immediately apparent without the children.
Well, because they envied you to some degree that you could have the 3 children and they can't?
Yes, although envy sounds like a negative word, and I'm sure there was an element of that, but the way I felt it expressed to me was really a warmth and a very positive thing.
So you wound up forming a band. Were there enough musicians in that you could find immediately who played competently in the Western styles?
Yes, there were. The band was not something that I set out to do, or I didn't set out looking for musicians exactly. I met I had an American friend named Dave Levenger, who happened to be the U.S. Treasury Department representative to Beijing, who played saxophone and was a neighbor. He and I played a couple of times, and it was really fun. But what really turned the band around and made a band was I hadn't played much at all during my first year in China. Over the summer visiting, I bought a new guitar really to inspire myself. I brought it back, and the headstock was broken off. I was very upset about that. I started looking for a competent repairman, and several friends who played guitar and been in for a while recommended a young Chinese guy who had a new shop. His name was Woody Wu. So I got in touch with Woody. I dropped the Guitar World name to try to make sure I got some good service, and it worked. So he invited me down. He told me he could fix the guitar, and we started talking. Woody was covered in tattoos. He had long black hair in his eyes and about 4 or 5 earrings in each ear. And I was thinking he'd be sort of a modern rock, heavy metal guy, and maybe someone who could take me around to some cool music clubs. But then I saw a familiar face peeking out from under his left shirt sleeve, which was a tattoo of Stevie Ray Vaughan, the great Texas blues guitarist who had figured very prominently in my career at Guitar World. And that completely flipped the conversation with Woody. And the next thing you knew, we were talking about playing together.
and forming a company that used his first name and your first name.
That's
which,
right.
Which, of course, is an American joke, Woody Allen.
Right. Well, the very first time we played, I had a friend who owned a restaurant called The Orchard, and she had invited me to host an open mic. So I asked Woody if he would do it with me, and I really thought we'd be playing five or six songs and just hosting an acoustic open mic, and if it worked, we'd form a separate band. So the Woody Allen joke was just too funny to not use. If I had known we were going to end up doing what we did, I may have thought harder on something else, but I'm glad we didn't. It was a joke that worked out.
Alan Paul's written a book called Big in China, My Unlikely Adventures, Raising a Family, Playing the Blues, and Becoming a Star in Beijing. It's published by Harper. So Woody, I assume, knew other musicians who could play fairly well because he was at the center of the whole thing.
Right. Well, first of all, Woody didn't just tinker around with the guitar or with the blues. He had a really deep passion for it, and he was a wonderful player, and he was primarily playing lap steel guitar, which was fantastic. I mean, I would have been thrilled to find a great lap steel player in the U.S. It's not a common thing. To find it in Beijing and have him be so interested in playing with me was almost too much. I knew I had to push it and see what I could do.
Well, Western music is so different from Chinese music. It has, in fact, if any two musics can be more different, I can't imagine. So are people just being brought up these days within the Western traditions?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think it's fair to say that a lot of young Chinese are not steeped in traditional Chinese music.
But they're more likely to be listening to blues and rock and jazz?
They're not very likely to be listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan. That was an unusual find.
Well, playing lap steel guitar.
Yeah, there is a movement there. There's some very popular young bands coming up that are more oriented in the Sonic Youth tradition. There's a real movement of that, of sort of punk and post-punk. There's heavy metal is quite popular. So it's sort of shred guitar is popular. Hip-hop is popular. Blues is not really so popular. But we made it popular.
Did all of them speak English? Because other than Dave Levenger, everybody was Chinese.
Right. No, Woody had spent 3 years in Australia. He spoke excellent English. The other members of the band who eventually joined and or what really clicked into being a real band, the drummer Liu Wei and the bass player Zhang Yong spoke no English. My Chinese was better than their English. So we communicated when we really had to have a deep conversation through Woody, translating everything. But we really reached a point where we were so in sync musically that we could communicate with, you know, nods and tempo changes and key changes and things like that that really literally transcend language.
Your common ground were things like the Allman Brothers Band, that you all liked that.
Well, actually, no. The Allman Brothers was a music that had really fueled my passion and been the center of a lot of my work with Guitar World. And what really turned the band around was when I realized that they didn't know the Allman Brothers, and I had the opportunity to introduce them to them. We had connected so well on sort of a friendly level and on a musical compatibility level that I sometimes forgot the cultural differences. And Zhang Yong was about 35 years old, fantastic bass player, steeped in funk, blues, jazz, rock. It never occurred to me that he hadn't heard the Allman Brothers. It would be inconceivable to have a comparably aged and talented musician here. They may not like him. They may not be inspired by them necessarily, but to not know them was inconceivable.
Were you writing your own material? Because the songs on the album are in English and in Chinese.
That's right. The Chinese songs are written by and sung by Zhang Yong, the bass player. The English songs are all written by me, with the exception of You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome When You Go, which is our reinterpretation of a Bob Dylan song, and Will the Circle Be Unbroken, the traditional American song.
And how did you how were you able to become famous in China? They don't have music stores, do they?
No, we were really our success and fame, such as it was, really came about through live performance. We performed relentlessly throughout Beijing, and we developed a following. Initially playing mostly in expat places. Eventually, as we got a little bit better, we wrote more original material. Woody started pushing us more and more into Chinese venues, and then we had the great fortune of all that performance paying off. We won an award as the best band in Beijing from City Weekend magazine. which was a tremendous honor. And Woody began to really promote that in Chinese online. And that really opened up a lot of doors where promoters would contact him. And that's what led to us playing at the Xiamen Beach Festival in front of 5,000 people, going to Changsha, Hunan, and playing in a series of clubs. And promoters started reaching out to us. When we went to these places, we were really a big deal as the best band in Beijing arriving, and also as a band led by a foreigner, which was not so unusual in Beijing, but quite unusual elsewhere. And we got on a lot of radio and TV shows as a result.
So here's your wife working for the Wall Street Journal, and you're working too.
That's right. I was also writing a column for the Wall Street Journal online called The Expat Life and capturing all of this craziness swirling around me.
Alan Paul and his wife, Rebecca Blumenstein, will be speaking at the Asia Society on Wednesday, March 30th. That's at 6:30. For tickets and more information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. His book is called Big in China: My Unlikely Adventures Raising a Family, Playing the Blues, and Becoming a Star in Beijing. It's published by Harper's, and thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you very much.
Are you still playing, or are you writing again?
Absolutely. I'm doing both. I've learned my lesson. There's no reason I have to choose one or the other.
Well, it's hard to find Chinese rock players in New York, isn't it?
I've given up on that aspect of it for now, but if there's anyone listening, please come to my website and drop me a line.
Oh,